Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and get it out of the way because I also see a Green Bay Packers jacket. I'm sorry to disappoint. My name is Mason Cosby. If I were Mason Crosby, I'd be much more rich and famous and could tell you how to hit right between the uprights. Instead, I'll tell you how to make a lot more revenue. Here's what we're thinking about today. It's like specifically, what is ABM? Next, what does sales want? Next is balancing brand building and sales activation, which sounds really fancy. But like when you think about marketing, marketing has two jobs. We want people to like us. And we want people to buy from us. It's about it. And when we think about marketing's job, brand building is how do we get people to like us and know about us and see us as beneficial and helpful to the larger industry or community that we're a part of. Sales activation is how do we get them to actually say, I need you now. And then how do we get them to enter into the pipeline? So how do we balance those two? Next is how to operationalize the partnership. In your context, this will be much easier because marketing and sales is right here. We'll do a bit more on Q&A, and then if we've got time, ABM can get really complicated really quickly for really no good reason. So one of the things that I love as an exercise is what's your one-page ABM program? So like, don't overcomplicate it. You get one sheet of paper, write out the program based on what you're currently doing today. So you should actually walk out today, if we've got the time, with like a chicken scratched program that you could start to run with today. So if you guys have paper or you want to use your laptops, across the top, you could also do this in an Excel spreadsheet. We've seen this really work well in an Excel spreadsheet. Across the top, what you're going to want to write down is data, distribution, destination, and direction. I'm planting a lot of seeds of things that I'll have to define here in just a moment. So data, distribution, destination, and direction. Next is then down. Awareness, initial engagement, meaningful engagement, marketing qualified account, sales qualified account, opportunity and re-engagement. So when you've done this well, what you should have is across the top, data, distribution, destination, and direction. So your four Ds at the across the top, and then down the page, these different stages essentially creates a bit of a chart. Sorry, I'm already giving you some homework.
Yeah, I love it.
All right, give me a thumbs up when you've got it written. Well, thank you.
Am I the only one writing? I think I'm the only one.
Yep, but I appreciate it. I actually thought about grabbing. I actually did think about bringing a sheet of paper for everybody. You know, it's like, that's probably
paper nowadays.
That's ridiculous. Good. All right, cool. Hi, by the way, I'm Mason. I am local. I'm first a husband and then a father. And then I also run a company called Scrappy ABM. In the past 3 years as a solo marketer, actually at one point solo marketer and seller, I've sourced $9.5 million in tangible revenue. And when I say sourced, that doesn't mean pipeline. That's closed deals that became customers and actually liked working with us. In the past 16 months of running this company, 2.2 of that is actually our revenue. So I went from zero to 2.2 million in 16 months. So that's 20x ROI for niche and bootstrap businesses. And then our mission as an organization is to build the first successful account-based marketing program for our clients, actually teach them how to own it, and then graduate them when they're ready. I don't work with any client forever. I anticipate that the longest a client will work with us at most is 24 months. Because if you need more handholding past 24 months on your program, I failed you. So our goal is to get you successful and graduated. So we've talked a lot about this term already, ABM. What is it? I'm going to go ahead and give you the answer. ABM is a B2B revenue strategy that aligns the revenue team around a set of shared target accounts. I'm going to break that definition down further because there's still some jargon in that, if I'm being honest. But when I say revenue team, that is marketing, that is sales, that is customer success. So from how do people discover us to how do they stay with us forever, we get everybody on the same page. The reason that we build what is referred to as an account-based marketing program, and I'm going to break down that term even further. Account-based meaning, who are the companies that are our best fit potential companies that we know we can serve incredibly well? So let's define best fit. So like, they're highly profitable. They like us. They stick around for a really long time. They get great success stories. How do we figure out what are the characteristics of those kinds of companies?
And this is a transition from a lead-based approach. So I think most organizations are like, we have to get more leads. Like, we have to get more people in our database. And I've sat in a sales role as a full funnel AE. That was actually my first job. So I sourced my own pipeline, closed my own deals, and then managed the accounts afterwards. It was exhausting. But I was given a list by my COO at that company. And I was like, here's your 300 people. Go call these people. I was like, okay, got it. Why? And they're like, they're in our database. And that was the rationale. And I was like, do they need our stuff? And most of the time, the answer was no. So just calling people that actually did need our stuff that weren't good fit customers, they might buy in the first place, but they'd stick around for 3 months and then they'd leave. It's really exhausting and a high cost for the business. So the goal of ABM is to first determine who are our best fit customers. And when we talk about that from an alignment perspective, that is, again, getting finance on the same page, operations on the same page, the executive leadership team. We've got an investor in the room, so our investors on the same page, and saying, awesome, we're going to take the world of possibilities that we could serve to these people we know are our best fit. The goal is, again, how do we focus really clearly and really specifically on best fit customers so that when they actually buy from us, one, we have a lower customer acquisition cost because we spend more focused time on getting best fit people. We have a higher lifetime value because they actually stick around for longer. And this is one thing that I've shared with a lot of people, and it's a helpful mind shift, is you only have one customer acquisition cost. So like the biggest piece to like increase LVT to like CAC is how do we get them to stay for longer? And that's best fit customers. So if you can improve how long someone stays with you, you end up having a better overall healthier business. So spend a lot of time on this. I also just like to make things really simple. So like, we all just want to have our best fit potential customers know that we exist. That's step one. Step two, we want them to understand the problem that they're facing. Nobody buys a solution unless they have a problem. Step three, we want these same accounts to understand we can help their problems go away. All right. Step four, we want them to get them to buy from us to fix the problem. Step five, we want them to stay with us forever. And then ideally, they actually buy more from us. It's about it. Just simplified all of marketing and sales to six bullet points. And also customer success in a large way. So that then begs the question. Sorry, I skipped a slide. That all sounds really simple. For quick context, though, fun fact from the company that actually acquired Sixter, 94% of B2B organizations were building an ABM program in 2020. According to research that has come out as of 2023, only 23% of ABM programs have been deemed successful. So if this is that simple in theory, why is it so hard and why does it fail? There are three very well-researched reasons. One, as we just talked about, alignment between marketing and sales. So what this kind of comes in two flavors. One is sales says, well, I'm going to go after these companies, and these are the people I'm going to focus on. And it is, at times, not data-backed. And when I was in a sales seat, I actually focused on companies that I thought would be cool to work with. Like, just to be honest, like, I was like, I would really like this company because that'd be awesome. And that was my rationale. It was not data-backed. It was not focused. They were not a good fit customer. It's just like, I'd like to have this logo on my resume. So like, I'll give you a quick example. I've closed Airbus. I've closed Embraer. I've closed NVIDIA. I've closed Maersk. Really cool logos. Really hard to service. Really bogged our teams down operationally. And yes, I can make great claims about my ability to close those clients, but like, they were not actually the best fit for our organization. So not good. So there's that side. The other side is marketing will sometimes pull data-backed lists that are based in dirty data. So then as a result, sales has a unique opportunity with qualitative data that is like actual feedback from a customer in a sales process that may not be documented. So if marketing comes with this list and sales like, well, we've already talked to that company, and that company, and they told us all these reasons they didn't want to move forward, then you've got misalignment on that front. So there's that side. That's that flavor of sales doesn't want to buy in because I'm going to close cool logos. Marketing pulls a data-backed list that is based in dirty data, and as a result, doesn't actually align with what sales knows to be true based on the qualitative information that they're getting. Sales has better feedback loops and quicker timeframes. So we need a mix of the two. The other thing that I've actually seen now a lot, we've got five clients that we're helping build their ABM pro, and we've got more than five clients, but to be clear, in those five, that I'm referencing, we're actually helping their CROs update their sales comp plans. Because what we've actually seen is that we've shifted who the best fit customer is, and some sales teams are getting compensated less for closing better fit customers. So in that context, if I'm a salesperson and I get paid and I'm going to get paid less, why would I work with those? Like, so there's a lot that marketing can do. There's also things that based on sales comp, executive leadership needs to fix. So that's the first thing. I don't think that's a challenge in your context, but it's something to be aware of as you inevitably grow. Second thing, which I do think is potentially in your context, is a lack of dedicated resources. So we're going to throw out this idea, and like I think we're all going to look at each other and be like, that's awesome. It's like, great, who's doing it? Like, and that happens a lot in small organizations. So I always make the reference of like marketing manager Susie, and like Susie already had a full-time job, and we just threw another thing at her. And Susie can't do it. So like in this context, if we just throw another thing at these two, they already have full-time jobs. Like they may not have the time to actually build an ABM program. And again, it's organizational change because we're actually going to fundamentally change how we measure success over time. So we go from a lead scoring metric to account scoring and account engagement. So it's less on like, did we generate 100 leads this month? And it's more like, did we get 100 of the best fit potential customers to know that we existed and actually to be engaged with our brand? Different change in measurement. So we need to have the resourcing in place to help facilitate that change. And the last thing is that it's super difficult to measure. As we were already talking, we had firmographics, technographics, psychographics, just on the front end of like things that we have to consider of our best fit potential customers. That scoring and that measurement of what is best fit is like one component of the ICP. So we need to make sure we're engaging ICP fit customers. The next thing, we need to make sure that they're actually engaged with our brand through first party engagement. On top of that, we need to weight the people that are engaging differently based on who they are in the buying committee. So like in my context, a marketing manager is weighted very differently than a CMO, a chief marketing officer, because a CMO has much more buying capabilities than a marketing manager. So like that engagement needs to be weighted differently. Not to also mention potentially third-party intent data. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with intent data, but you can actually see what people are searching for online. And as a result, know that they're more actively in a buying mode. So you can then actually prioritize. So true account-based scoring models factor all of those things together into a score to then say, this account is red hot. As I outlined all of that, that's like a 6-month project for just like reporting. And I think that's a complete waste of time on the front end because you spend 6 months building a reporting mechanism on something that isn't built. Or the inverse is you spend 6 months building something but don't know how to report on it. So we have to figure out first, how do we measure success as we build this program? So outline all of these things. Product market fit is what you need for an ABM program because you have to be able to clearly articulate for this subset of accounts, for these reasons, we are the best fit for you. Yeah. If you don't have that story, it doesn't make sense to do an ABM program. And I'll give you context of like, we have people that we weren't targeting. So our largest client is not a standard ICP fit for us. They just are a super weird client that I can't replicate. And I've looked at it. They're like a media company that does large-scale marketing events on email, direct mail, events, and podcasting. So we help build their sponsorship ABM program. Makes no sense, but they're our largest client. And I looked at, should we try to replicate more clients like this? And the reality is they're a market of one. I can't find more like them. So I'm not going to. Like, and they're super highly profitable. I love them. I can't find more of them. So it's also market size. So yes, these smaller utilities, there's more of them, but do we have a clear story that indicates we're the best fit for you for this reason with this product? Is there a way to more easily and sustainably get in front of them in a way that actually captures their attention? And do they close within a realistically decent time frame? If we can answer the yes to those questions, it makes sense. If the answer is no to some of those questions, we may still do some marketing programming, but I wouldn't build an ABM program because the ABM program at its simplest form is highly focused prioritization for sales on the best fit potential customers because sales is your most expensive acquisition channel. So if we can focus the highest cost channels on the best fit customers, you have a better ROI on your revenue program as well.
And the corollary of that is it's an exclusive approach. That is, exclude the wings, focus on the peak of the distribution.
Yes. And that is the challenge from an alignment perspective, because we are saying with an ABM program, we're going to intentionally exclude some okay fit people to go after our best fit people. If everybody's your best fit, nobody's your best fit.
Salespeople sometimes just feel very anxious about but somebody could.
Yes.
And there's always these examples of inbounds on the wing.
Yes.
I'm not saying give them the finger.
No.
No.
Keep working your inbounds. Yeah. But as you're thinking about, where do I go outbound? Where do I prioritize my time, energy, and effort? It's on the data-backed, proven, these are our best fit customers that have the highest ROI for us as a business, have the best use case stories, turn into the best case studies, have the highest lifetime value, and ideally have actually a lower CAC because we're so focused and specific. Yeah. If you think about it, it's, what does marketing bring to the table? Marketing should bring market size and reach. So how large is this potential market of these specific accounts? How easy is it to reach them? And how engaged are they in general with marketing, programming, and content and education? Because you said from a psychographic perspective, somebody that's been in seat for 25 years likely isn't researching, how do I do my job better? They're likely doing more 401k planning.
And he's walking the floor rather than ballpoint pens. Mm-hmm. He's not asking.
Exactly. So there's that side. From there, it's then sales. So from a sales perspective, who actually has the availability and the willingness to even meet? And then from that perspective, are they what is referred to as single-threaded, meaning they gatekeep everybody else? So, no, I just want to have this conversation. You know, I don't want to go bother my Well, if you're a serious buyer, you're pulling other people in. And then from there, within the context of the buying committee, who are the standard champions? Who are the standard blockers? Who are the standard influencers in the deal? And how do we actually reach those people? Because for example, just give you a quick freebie. You can advertise on LinkedIn a list natively of 300 contacts. So you could actually build specific programming for in-pipeline opportunities that are focused on an ROI story that exclusively targets executives. And then all your ad programming is focused on accelerating pipeline with the ROI story of a customer just like them. And if you can make sure that your ads are showing up everywhere, it accelerates the pipeline and ensures that even though the person you're talking to may be gatekeeping you and you can't get to the executive, surprise, surprise, your marketing programming can. Because your marketing programming can show up anywhere. Your sales team can only show up typically where they're allowed.
Yeah.
So that's the alignment component. From there, awesome. What does CS bring to the table? Customer satisfaction.
Ease, how much ease, costly are
yes, how of delivery. And then what does finance bring? Profitability. What does operations bring is the complexity of catering to specific clients. So if you actually align all of those teams, and you can then say, great, based on all of these components, these are the best fit clients, and here are the characteristics that make these people up, we now have a very accurate picture of current state what best fit is. So that's for lack of the back of the napkin math way of doing it. What is now coming on the market in a very significant way are ICP development tools. Because historically it was all these conversations, but there's now tooling that you can use. I'm an advisor for one company called Boost Ideal that actually will analyze all of your data and then spit out based on market trends, third-party intent, first-party engagement data, and then historical context. Here's a draft of your best fit potential customer, and it's dynamic. So as the market changes, it will actually change who you should be targeting over time. So that is the kind of 2.0 version. But that's, if you're thinking through it, and then the other thing, sorry, specific sales metrics to look at would be sales cycle length is a component, because the longer your sales cycle length, the higher your CAC is, because you've got more salespeople dedicating more time to those specific accounts. And then also close rates on these specific subset of accounts. So if they close relatively quickly, and I put relatively as compared to the lifetime value, and they close at a high rate, that helps you understand your LTV to CAC ratio for that specific subset of accounts. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what it all comes back to. And that's the core metric that you want to look at for best fit customers is LTV is typically associated with revenue, but more specifically, it's LTGP, so lifetime gross profit,
right,
to CAC. And if you can understand that ratio, that determines from a pure financial perspective, best fit customer. And then depending on the business that you are, like me, I really pay a lot of attention of who's fun to work with from a personality perspective.
Yep.
I'd actually rather take a slightly lower profit client if they're really great to work with and they're really pleasant to work with. Because I don't know. I like having fun with my job. So that's more a personal preference. But all that to say, great conversation on why it fails. The next question is more specifically like, what are the goals of sales? And it's relatively simple. Meetings that are qualified that close. That's it. What's the time horizon for sales? So this gets back into the alignment piece. It's days. So what do I have going on today? It's weeks. So the deals in my pipeline, how do I push them forward to the next stage this week? And it's quarters. Do I have enough pipeline to hit my goals? Typically, that's about it, unless you've got a really strategic seller and they may be thinking about the year. But most sellers are not thinking about 27 at this point. We've got some really great sellers that are probably thinking about like Q4 of 25 right now. That's about like the truest, furthest extent that sales is thinking, which is fine. Begs the question, what's the time horizon for marketing? Months. So I've been working for 2 months. We launched a newsletter a month ago, but I worked for 2 months to develop a newsletter strategy, get the content banked up, and then we launched the newsletter. It took me essentially a quarter to get a newsletter up and running and launched, because that was part of a much larger strategy, had a lot of technology that was needed, and to build out all the content. Next was quarters. So like I've already mapped out the quarterly objectives for marketing for all of 2025. And I'm now thinking about what do we need to accomplish from a brand perspective and how do we balance that with the needs of pipeline. And then years, I will likely rebrand my business in 2028. So like I'm thinking about the market positioning of now essentially 2028, and I'm building out our 2030 goals. So when we think about the time horizon for marketing, like I actually showed our strategy team, like my calendar, because for content, I have 12 sales calls this week. So when they're like, wait, you have 12 dedicated meetings for just sales? I was like, yeah, that's what it's like to be in sales. Like when the client is available, you meet. Whereas with marketing, typically the truest, like most pressing deadline is like, this needs to be done this week. Not for sales. It's like, I need this in the next hour. It's like a client says, or a potential client says, I need a proposal. You stop everything that you're doing. You build the proposal. You send it right then. So the time horizons for sales, much shorter. Time horizon for marketing, much longer thinking, which challenges the alignment component. The other thing, and I hate to simplify it, but sales typically doing 4 or 5 things, tops. I'm emailing people to get a meeting on the calendar. I'm doing said meetings. I'm preparing for said meetings. I'm sending proposals. I am emailing to get contracts signed. Truly about it. Now I make that oversimplified, so forgive me. What is marketing doing? Everything. Am I wrong? Like,
no.
And when we think about it, from marketing's perspective, all of this is super helpful for sales.
Yes.
It's all essential. When we think about it from sales perspective, maybe email, maybe events, maybe paid search, maybe paid social, maybe webinars, for sure referral programs, making my decks pretty, helping me with outbound and managing the website so I get more inbounds. Those for sure help me. Maybe. So again, we think about an alignment component. Sales looks a lot of what marketing is doing when pipeline is low. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, why are we not building more pipeline? And marketing's like, well, all this is going to help you next quarter. And they're like, well, I'm not eating today. So I don't care about next quarter. I hear it. This is like, I get it. We need to build a podcast so we can actually like build the pipeline. And couldn't agree more. Like podcast and influencer program, going to build the brand. But like, do we have pipeline now? Building brand will build pipeline. Totally hear you. Do we have pipeline now? But we hit our MQL goals. Totally hear you. Do we have pipeline now? We have incredible account engagement. They are all over our website. They know about us. That's great. Do we have pipeline now? This keeps going for a while. massive spikes in followers. That's great. Website traffic through the roof. Where's the pipeline? So don't get me wrong, like marketing needs to think long-term. I'll give you quick context. Like, is it, and I'll be honest, like it, when, cause we closed quite a bit in November for our organization. And I looked at it, I was like, whoa, we did like 2.2 in 17 months. That's awesome. What didn't go into that is I've spent 4 years building a personal brand on LinkedIn around the concept of account-based marketing. 3 of those years, I did make money for other people, but I worked at other organizations before launching my own. So like 3 years of building a brand that then I captured in year 4. So we need to think long-term. But if we don't survive the short-term, the long-term doesn't get here. So I, at one point in the job, went to my boss and I said, I want to do a day-long virtual conference. And I don't want to have any revenue goals associated. I want it to be a complete brand play. And I was given the license to do that because our pipeline was full. So when the pipeline's full, we can kind of do whatever we want. Like, we can build the brand, we can have those fun activities, but until the pipeline's full, we can't do anything. And this is actually one of my most favorite charts of all time. It's a data-backed approach of the appropriate balance between activation and brand building. It comes from a book called The Long and Short, and they did a ton of research, and essentially the breakdown is 60% of marketing's time, energy, and effort should go towards brand building. 40% should go towards sales activation. That's it. And it's because they deliver on different time frames. You can Google it, you can go look it up, super helpful. And as you can see, if we don't have a pipeline right now, we need to activate the sales team, because that will build pipeline in the next 6 months, without question. The challenge is it's super volatile. So it's that up and down, like, and I'm sure we've all experienced it, when the pipeline's super full, we're like on top of the world, we're having meetings left and right, we're closing left and right. And then we work the pipeline and it goes down. And then like 2 months later, we have a fire drill because we're like, everyone hates us. No one wants to work with us. What are we going to do? Like, and then we do a bunch of activities. We really build up the pipeline again. And we just live in that cycle. It's exhausting. So how I like to frame it and think about it is goals for growth. Build pipeline today. That pipeline gives us breathing room. Most revenue ails are cured with pipeline. And then once we've actually got the breathing room, we can build the brand. And then what we have to do is communicate timelines and consequences. Because what I'm about to walk through is actually how you can generate exponentially more pipeline today. It will have short-term consequences that benefit in the long term. And then the other thing that has been a very helpful framing for me is the difference between problems and opportunities. No organization is typically on short of ideas. What we need to then categorize those ideas are, is this a problem? Meaning, this is how we can improve the organization right now, given our current situations and circumstances. Or is this an opportunity? Opportunities are ways that you can massively grow the business, but they're untested and unproven and unknown. Problem are like, this hurts right now, we gotta fix this. How do we fix this thing that's hurting us right now? Opportunities are like, wouldn't it be cool to do a massive virtual event that we've never done before? That's what I did. As an opportunity. We solved a lot of our problems, so I got the license to make really cool opportunities happen. This is my script of exactly how I would talk about it. We can do things right now to fill the pipeline. Here's my hesitation. Damaged brand reputation, weakened audience trust, and then the worst thing of all, sorry, I'm gonna pick on investors for a moment. If we deliver in the short term and massively build pipeline and see a dramatic increase in revenue, they're like, awesome. That's our new standard. And I was like, no. Like that was not intended to be the standard. That was intended to like give us breathing room so we can have better long-term results 18 months from now. Data-backed, we need 18 months. So if we make short-term success the new standard, we've created continuous volatility and unrealistic goals. Massive problem. But if we can get aligned on building short-term programs right now, we should spend the next like 6 to 9 months knowing we'll have some pipeline volatility, but we'll create highly operationalized, systematic processes that allow us to continuously build new pipeline while we go after new audiences that don't know that we yet exist. Long-term, we'll actually have a better brand that will make it easier to generate pipeline, accelerate, and increase our close rates. So that's the like high-level script. What do we need? A consistent pipeline goal for 18 months. So we're gonna like say this is the goal. We're gonna dedicate, from a marketing perspective, 60 to 70% of our time to directly building repeatable sales activation programs in the next 6 months. So we're gonna stop doing all the crazy fun brand things. And we're gonna say, how do we consistently get good fit opportunities in the pipeline for sales, given our current situation? How do we do that? And then these programs should be always on and programmatic. And then inevitably, they get just passed to sales. And what happens is you get a list that's like, awesome, I'm going to reach out to this person with this message at this time for this reason. It's an automated list with templatized messaging, so you know what to say and how to say it, and you have clear reasons to reach out. This is the best example. I sat in a sales seat and I got a list for marketing. It was like, reach out to these accounts, they hit 80 points. It's like, what does that mean? Versus, I'm going to skip ahead, an activation play, which is a repeatable process for when sales or CS become involved in specific customer conversations. I want to just skip to the best example. All right. So 80 points versus they were on our website and looked at our product pages, but didn't book a meeting. Should probably reach out. They worked at a different company that was another facility, a water treatment facility, and they moved to a different water treatment facility. Huh. Two things happened there. One, we should reach out to that company that just lost our main point of contact and retain them. And we should follow them because they previously bought from us, seen the value, and now we can go get them at their new company. Awesome. Event activation. How do we go to events doing three different playbooks all in one? Get meetings booked before the event, have standard training on how to actually engage at events, and then have clear reasons to reach out after the event. I'm going to pick on, SDRs in general. Post-COVID, people legitimately don't know how to go in person and like do meetings. Like they don't, because all meetings are typically a 30-minute transaction on a calendar. They show up on a Zoom, they leave, that's it. How do you naturally do qualification in person while also talking about your family and your wife and your kids? Or like, I'm going to give you the example of like, I brought scones and muffins because before COVID, when I was a seller, I always brought cookies because if my presentation sucks, at least you got good cookies. Like it's these little things that we don't train on because most of sales has become virtual. So when we actually just send a team of SDRs or an SDR, sorry, picking on you, but like we send an SDR to an event and we didn't give you any training. I'm like, well, what do you do at the event? All your training is based in a virtual sales process where you've got Salesforce pulled up and you know exactly what to do. What do you do when you don't have Salesforce pulled up? So like we have to train on that. Sorry, I get really passionate about that one specifically because events are a massive expense that we massively underutilize. Missed meetings. So again, people cancel meetings. But at one point they were like, this is super interesting. And often we don't have like a good program to re-engage in. This is more marketing than sales. Closed lost. We had a client that came to us and they had $2 million on their target account list in their closed loss bucket. And they had made a rule that once it's closed lost, marketing doesn't touch it again. Super dumb. But we literally pulled the list and was like, so these target, and they only had like 300 target accounts that they were going after. $2 million worth of their target accounts were not getting touched by anybody because it was sitting in closed lost. So like on a monthly or quarterly basis, you can re-engage your lost deals that were good fit at one point, already know that you exist, already know about your products. They just said no for some reason previously, and you can overcome that past objection to get them to buy from you now. Sorry, I'm really passionate about opportunities. Stalled deals, like we talked about time and stage. How do you continue to accelerate the deal and keep meetings rolling? So like prime example, I'll use us. We've been talking for what, 3-4 months at this point?
Yeah.
I've ensured that there's always a meeting on the calendar. Sorry, I'm giving away some of my secrets. If we don't talk for a while, that's okay. But like you show up on my LinkedIn content, I show up on your LinkedIn content, like I'm around, you've never forgotten about me. Yeah. I just always was there. So I wasn't like, so we're gonna buy now? We're gonna buy, like just hanging out. And I brought scones and everybody's happy. Deal multi-threading. So I'll be very honest. If you had just stayed the only person involved in the deal, I've been like, typically we need sales and marketing both on the same page around this. So we can potentially start talk with sales as well. The more I can get multi-threaded into the deal, the better. And then lastly is typically in your sales process, there is a stage in which people get stuck. And we know that. How do we proactively overcome the reasons we would get stuck? This happens all the time. And people are just like, oh yeah, that's just one stage. It's like super unpredictable. It's like, it's unpredictable for very predictable reasons. How do we then proactively fix those things? Sorry, I'm just... Next would be customer referral programs. Like if you have people that actually like you, your industry as you've outlined is super, super niche and very well connected. So you've already outlined one of the best ways that you actually get new business is a water facility treatment in like, let's say Whitestown refers you over to Carmel. Like that's it. But as your current state, I don't know that there's a systematic approach to how we do that. And like relationship mapping, you can do that relatively easily with like a contractor in India. So like that's an option. Upsells, we talked about that previously, and then customer win-backs. People leave. Your product has changed. Their needs may have changed. How do you go back after those people that previously left you? All of these, not marketing programs, like largely based in first-party and current data that you have available that you need to segment and operationalize with right messaging and right distribution channels. It's like, this is how you build the pipeline right now. Couple of challenges. Website re-engagement. People are weird about this sometimes. You may damage the brand with some people. It's okay. It's a trade-off. Honestly, outside of that, people may feel you're pushing. I actually generally push for a no in the sales process because I'd rather just say like, look, here's how we work. This is what we do. This is the price. If that's interesting, awesome. If not, that's okay. We can still be friends and I'm happy to refer you to other people. And I have an average 60-day sales cycle on $140,000 deals. So like, I just get it done and then I move on. And I also close at like 35% to give you context as well. So like I close a lot of my deals. They move quickly. They're at a high deal value because I'm just really intentional. Like, I don't want to drag this out. If you want to buy, let's buy. If you don't, that's fine. The value is not getting any worse. So if you like it now, you'll like it later. And then, yeah, just customer referral programs. Like, this is a helpful framing that I learned of, if you have friends and you get value from us, why would you not refer us to your friends? Do you hate your friends? Like, because you like us and we helped you, let me help your friends. Like, and it, some people feel weird about being lightly pushy in sales. When you know what you do is actually helpful, that's the other thing of like the conviction that you have around these larger organizations where you're like, I was kind of blunt. You should feel that clear and that direct with your best fit customer because you have an ethical obligation to help them actually do better in their job and do better for their company. Like that's the value of really good sales in an account-based program. It's not slimy. It's not salesy. It's like fundamentally, you have this problem. We solve it. It will not only make you more money, it will save you more money, it will save you more time. Do this or don't. But it's actually really helpful for you. So anyway, that's my thought process. So once you've built those programs, then you shift. Because really at that point, it's more maintenance and maintaining the 40%. So you need to update your content, you need to update your targeting, but the fundamental operational processes largely stay the same. So then marketing spends 40% of their time maintaining, keeping these things up to date, running with them. And then we spend 60% of our time focused on brand building. And I'll walk through how to operationalize brand building. Again, sales eventually start to own it largely. And marketing's job is education. It's thought leadership. It's framing the problems. And it's helping people shift the way that they think, specifically in your industry. One of the things you guys have outlined is like people don't even know that this is a viable solution. They don't know any other way because they've never experienced another way. So like educating people, like this is a new way that you can actually improve your chemical treatments. And instead of, you gave me the example of like, yeah, they dumped in a bunch of stuff last year and it didn't have a problem. So they wrote that down and that's been their standard. That's wild. So like the fact that there is a better, I'm not going to lie. On one of our calls, I was like, I wish I didn't know this. Like, I was assured that Whitestown is good water, and I'm going to just believe that with my heart. Okay.
Good.
Okay. Heck yeah. The other thing this eventually does is right now, you guys are reaching out to largely cold audiences. And what this does with this shift is your outreach goes to warm audiences. And then marketing's job, through awareness level programming and actually building the pain and building the problem and framing the solution, creates opportunities where sales can reach out to warmer and warmer and warmer audiences, which overall decreases your CAC. So that's the shift. This data-backed 18-month process, just kind of hard. Like it's a lot of intentional work and there's a lot of questions along the way. So I already outlined what activation play is. This is the 4D framework for how you structure all of your different playbooks. So it's data, and data is the most complex. Data is a mix of targets, so who we're going after, with triggers. Trigger would be reasons to reach out. And then because you've got right fit people with good reasons to reach out, you can create highly personalized, nuanced, specific messaging. what a lot of people will do with their first ABM program is they'll only focus on targets. So they'll say, okay, we're going to go after the Midwest facilities that are at this revenue, not revenue, but this number of people served, and we're going to go after these people. That is one step removed in my mind from just a general pray and spray approach, because all we've done, sorry, I'm just, it's just the honest truth. Like, yes. And like pray and spray, prayer works. Like I'm not against prayer, but like at the end of the day, we can be more strategic about it. So instead of just saying, cool, we carved out this part of the country and maybe lightly nuanced of like, go Packers. Like instead we take targets with right triggers, which would be, hey, it was great to see you at that event last week. Or, hey, it looks like you were actually checking out some of the content on our website. I wanted to provide this additional resource that might be helpful for you. There you go. So again, targets with triggers creates personalized, nuanced, specific messaging that can be nuanced to the persona and to the product and to the impact. Data is the most complex. The rest of it's actually relatively simple. Distribution. How do we get in front of these people? Could be outbound, could be ads, could be a webinar, could be an email. It could be an event, it could be any number of things. But like at the end of the day, where do these people live? How do we systematically get in front of them? Next, destination. So based on why you're reaching out, you have a clear indication of what they just recently engaged with. That then begs the question, what is the next step that they need to take towards becoming our customer? More often than not, it is not book a call. More often, it's content, it's information, it's education. So the question is, based on the trigger we have, where are we sending them? And how do we help them get better informed on why they should buy our stuff? And lastly is direction, which is just how do we track it? If you know who you're going after, why you're reaching out, what you're saying to them, how you're getting in front of them, what you're sending them to, and how to track it, you have a highly repeatable process that you can execute sustainably. If you want a TLDR version, that's it. We like to start here because as I just outlined it, I've got a head nodder, thank you. Really helpful for the affirmation. Marketing and sales comes far more naturally from an alignment perspective and really just the organization. Because I just outlined everything, took me about 5 minutes and everybody's like, yeah, that makes sense. Like it's intentionally designed to create simplicity, which then actually makes it easier to get started. Next, hey, it keeps things really simple. Like you have everything you need today to actually get started with this information based on your current first party data. Like it's all in your CRM. Maybe website engagement, you need to install a couple of free tools like rb2b or factor.ai to de-anonymize your website traffic. We'll talk about that separately. But like you have everything you need to actually do something with this information. Other thing you can start to do is you transition how you measure success in the tech stack. So through these different touch points, you can actually see what touch points are the highest converting opportunities, which then over time, when you get to the ability to build out account scoring models, it makes it much easier to then say, these indications actually allow us to know with predictability, these are how we know people will convert. It's like, great. This audience has consistently looked at this case study and these use case pages and then booked a call. Cool. We know consistently these are high indications of success for booking a meeting that closes. But we're now paying attention to those things, not as a lead metric, but as an account scoring metric, an account engagement metric. And that comes down the road. I don't like scoring models to start because they make things more complex and it's more difficult to buy in. So again, if I go and I say, hey, we've got this account that's got 80 points, you should reach out. It's harder to buy in as a salesperson versus they looked at our product page, our pricing page, and our schedule a call page, but they didn't book a meeting. Can you reach out? Different conversation, clear reasons to reach out. I already walked through a bunch of these examples. And again, I recommend starting here. The only couple that would be potentially difficult to operationalize current state would be website re-engagement, depending on your current tech stack. And the only one for a lot of people is champion tracking. Here's the like poor man's way of doing it. Do you guys send out a newsletter? I think you guys have a newsletter.
No.
You don't? You want to. Okay. When you start inevitably sending out your newsletter.
You'll see when people's addresses bounce.
Yes. Thank you. So you just can create a segmented list of hard bounces. And then you know, oh, these people aren't at their job anymore. You go look them up on LinkedIn and you're like, why are you no longer at your job? Like, and then you can do two things. One, this is actually, I helped 60 people land jobs in the past 3 years, which is awesome because I essentially found people that I really wanted to work at a specific company and I helped them land at my target accounts. And then two people liked me. the hiring manager because I sourced them great talent, and the person that got a job. And you know when they needed help, who did they call? Me, because I was already in front of them. So like that's a pre-nurture track for like developing great relationships with your specific target accounts. So champion tracking is awesome, website re-engagement, and then the other one that is at times difficult is customer referral programs. On LinkedIn, what you can actually do is, can somebody pull up LinkedIn? I think I've shown you this previously. Again, I don't know how active your industry is necessarily with LinkedIn specifically. It's maybe a little bit hit or miss, but if you just go to the search bar, you press enter, you type in a specific person. Sorry, you hit enter, then you hit all filters. I'm actually gonna walk you through this without looking at it and see how much I remember. So all filters. And then you can actually scroll down and you can, there's a filtering criteria that is connection of. And what you can look at are the people that are connections of a specific person and or organization. And then you can see relationship mapping of, I'm trying to break into this account. You're a customer and you already know these people at these specific companies I'm trying to break into. So you go to ask for a referral. You're not saying, do you know anybody that needs our help? Because the answer is like, I'll keep my ears out for sure. Instead, you say, hey, it looks like you're connected with so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so. We've really been trying to get an intro to those organizations. Would you be able to make an intro to even just one of these people if you know them?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's a specific ask that generally gets a higher response rate. Mm-hmm. So those are things that are like the poor man's operational capabilities. There's tooling like a company called UserGems. UserGems actually automates champion tracking in its entirety and keeps your data clean. And then for customer referral programs, there's another company called Commasore. Instead of go to market, they're called go to network. And they help you identify who within your network can make introductions for you. So they are actually an operationalized and scalable way to do customer referrals. All right. Awesome. What comes next? I'm going to oversimplify ABM for a moment. There are three stages. Marketing does stuff to generate awareness and engagement. Sales gets involved for some reason. Marketing and sales works together to close the deal. Those are the three stages. As you look back at this, most of this is stage two. Sales gets involved for some reason. Might be website engagement, might be champion tracking, might be an event, might be a missed meeting, might be customer referrals, upsell, customer winbacks. They got involved for some reason. Great. Then what we end up doing is building a marketing program that drives more of our right fit accounts into our specific sales triggers, which have already been operationalized and bought into. So then sales already knows what to say to those specific people and when to reach out. And then the goal is that at the awareness and initial engagement stages, we build programs that drive people into these other playbooks. And what we end up doing, here's the real like secret ninja move, direction of an awareness level playbook should function as a component of the data of an initial engagement playbook. So you end up connecting your plays together to actually guide accounts from one stage to the next. That said, we all know this isn't linear. No one will perfectly follow this path even a single time. What it does do though, is creates an intentional, systematic, guided path of what you should be saying at different times to different audiences based on specific triggers, and creates highly intentional conversations based on engagement touch points. Because let's say at the awareness stage, somebody discovers that you exist. They then go talk in private communities or in an event that is no way, shape, and form trackable. They completely skip initial engagement and meaningful engagement. They end up on your product page, your pricing page, and your schedule call page, looking all over your website. They may have skipped these stages, but we sure know they're here, and I'd like to do something with that information. Or somebody discovers you, they meet you at an event, they come to your webinar, they engage in your newsletter, they eventually hit your product page, your pricing page, and schedule call page. We're now re-engaging them to book a meeting. They're qualified, not based on fit, because that should have been determined like up here. You aren't targeting people that aren't a fit. We're qualifying for timing and budget. Is this a big enough problem to solve right now? Do you have the money to do so? And then it's a real opportunity that we work from there. That is how we inevitably go from activation playbooks into brand building that actually pushes the brand forward within our specific target markets and target accounts. This is my actual ABM program for my company. It looks really complex. It's actually really, really simple. I connect with my target accounts on LinkedIn. So I have a list and I connect with 100 people on a weekly basis. From there, they either come to events or they engage with my content on LinkedIn. I can export people that engage with my content from LinkedIn into an outbound sequencing tool. And I, based on the post that they recently engaged with, say, hey, thanks so much for engaging with this content. I actually have another thing that dives even deeper into this topic. Could be a podcast episode, could be some kind of a white paper, could be any number of things. But I provide next step specific content. And if they're actually an ABM expert, I invite them on my podcast. I have a podcast called Scrappy ABM. I'm like Spaceballs, everything is Scrappy ABM for me. And functionally, what that turns into is if they're an expert, they may not need my help unless they have bandwidth issues. If they have bandwidth issues, they immediately book a call because they're like, God, we think the same way. It's like, yeah, great. If they don't need support, what I end up saying is something to the extent of, man, I love how much we think the same way. I'm sure all your friends are asking you for help, but you don't have the time to do it because you're being the VP of marketing at wherever. If you have any friends that like really need help, would you mind sending them my way? And they're like, I'd be happy to. And then I get referrals that immediately book calls because I got other experts to vouch for me. Eventually, people end up on my website. I have specific product pages based on the product pages that they engage with that ends up booking a call, and then I reach out directly. This is one of the least trackable programs of all time. It's events, it's LinkedIn, it's podcasting. That's it. But we've figured out the measurement mechanisms and the right tooling to actually create a highly sustainable program that is in largely underutilized channels. I also want to give context. I was doing all of these things and then created the right structure around it to make it systematic in nature. So I was already having a podcast, already had LinkedIn, already had all those different things, put it into a structure, which now has made all of our programming exponentially more effective. I pulled this screenshot this morning. So like that's been our sales this year. So we've done 1.8 in sales this year. So I promise it works. It just comes back to this. Do we need pipeline now? Great. Do we have sustainable ways of generating new pipeline? Great. Once those two things are in place, build the brand. Brand building plays into sales activation, which then as a result creates a sustainable ongoing program through which you can generate consistent revenue within your best fit potential customers. I have a podcast. If you want to listen, you can scan the QR code. I walked through a lot. I know.
Thank you very much. That was wonderful.
Do you have questions?
I do.
Okay. Hit me with questions.
Is this process adapted when you intend to develop a channel partner, potentially even a distribution?
Yeah. And essentially what you end up doing is, ideal world, you use some kind of a tool if possible, like a cross.
They have to buy into the common platform tool.
Beam, which is now also with Reveal, or another tool is called Partner Stack. And the benefit that you end up getting with them is with that tool, you get access to second party data. So they actually are open to sharing their customer lists or their pipeline or their prospect target account lists. And then what you end up doing is with that partner actually creating a mutually agreed upon shared target account list, and inevitably through that develop a what's actually called a market development plan. So, okay, you've got customers that are a great fit for us. We have customers that are a great fit for you. How do we intentionally plan to make introductions in such a way that has that what is referred to often as a better together story? Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.